On Monday, April 14th, on the eve of Pope Benedict XVI's visit to the United States, four Catholic theologians gathered to discuss the impact of 40 years of Humanae Vitae, the Vatican document that solidified the ban on contraception. Widely acknowledged as a defining moment in modern church history, Humanae Vitae became a source of great conflict and division within the church. Today, we know that the majority of Catholics in the United States and around the world routinely ignored the ban on contraception. Our final podcast of this series features feminist theologian Mary Hunt. Mary Hunt is the co-founder and co-director of the Women's Alliance for Theology, Ethics, and Ritual, which began in 1983 in response to the need for theological, ethical, and liturgical development for and by women. Mary is a feminist theologian and ethicist who writes and lectures extensively on liberation issues. Here now, Mary Hunt.
I want to offer three ways in which Humanae Vitae has a direct negative effect on women. And because women typically carry major responsibility for children, I'll also comment on its implications for family life. I'll look at how Humanae Vitae has affected the laity's relationship with the clerical hierarchy and conclude with what a renewed Catholic theology of sexuality might look like if contraception were assumed to be healthy, good, natural, and holy. First, having a child is still medically risky in many parts of the world. Major World Health Agency data show that women die at the rate of 1 per minute from pregnancy-related causes, almost all of them in developing countries in Africa and Southeast Asia. Now, I don't want to argue this morning that the Catholic Church has caused these deaths directly, but I want to insist that its anti-contraceptive theology, implemented in public policy, results in a lack of available, affordable birth control, and this plays a significant role in these deaths. Likewise, especially for women in the Global South, low life expectancy due to multiple pregnancies, undue economic and care burdens because of a large number of children, and the risk of HIV/AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases because of Catholic condemnation of condoms all have a negative impact on women's well-being. Tragically, a ban on birth control that most Catholics in northern developed countries, as Rosemary indicated, that we ignore, has its most pernicious impact on those in the Global South whose need is greatest. In this respect, I believe it is fair to say that the Catholic Church does violence to women. Second, girls pay the highest price for Humanae Vitae. Lack of sex education goes hand in hand with limits on birth control. Many women with unmet contraceptive needs, according to a 2007 Alan Guttmacher Institute report, do not use contraceptives precisely because, quote, they don't believe they're at a risk of getting pregnant, despite the fact that they're sexually active. This situation is common in the Philippines and throughout Latin America, where the Catholic Church influences public policy, and just as importantly, where it influences social life. So that talking about birth control is risky, a sign that a girl is immoral rather than she's prudent. Related restrictions on emergency contraception around the world are fueled by Vatican efforts. Young women deserve better. Catholic adults have an obligation to protect and educate children, according to Catholic teaching, an obligation I believe that trumps an outmoded thinking on contraception. Third, all women are implicitly disempowered by Humanae Vitae and explicitly relegated to second-class citizenship. The document assumes that women, who are most deeply affected by a lack of birth control, are not competent moral agents capable of making reproductive health decisions with their partners. Such decisions are thought, mistakenly in my view, to be the purview of the Catholic hierarchy. The document also assumes that women who are sexually active are married and heterosexual, which is clearly not always the case. In addition, for one of the few times in church history when women like the late Patty Crowley, whom Rosemary mentioned, have actually been part of a consultative process, women's views were rejected. Of course, all of this is possible because no women are part of Catholic decision-making, which is reserved for clerics who must be men. Such a two-tiered system that renders Catholic women, no matter how competent, credentialed, and well-trained subordinate, remains in place today. The quality of family life is imperiled by Humanae Vitae. Contraception seems to be a settled matter for most U.S. Catholics, where use of birth control parallels that of non-Catholic citizens. But the hierarchy's successful collaboration with other religious fundamentalists at putting Roe versus Wade in jeopardy, influencing both restrictive legislation and the appointment of conservative judges, and its recent move to limit stem cell research and new reproductive technologies has only emboldened the Catholic institution to press harder on contraception. During the last 20 years in this country, the Church hesitated for fear of looking ridiculous to push on birth control. But now I believe we can say the Catholic Church moves backwards instead of forwards by insisting on a family-unfriendly policy. I contend that making decisions about the size and spacing of family is basic to a couple's rights and commitments as a married family and essential to the quality of family life. The Catholic religious tradition is based on love and justice, yet the institution persists in punitive attempts to prevent people from accessing the very means necessary to assure the quality of family life: smaller families, planned for children, and enjoyable sex for partners. Humanae Vitae, in my view, simply has no place in Catholic culture when what is needed is sex-positive teachings that will help to end sexual abuse, exploitation, and then encourage stable families. Now, this negative impact of Humanae Vitae reaches well beyond the matter of birth control to a broader sense of how the Catholic community itself functions. For example, many women report being counseled privately by priests to this day that it's all right to use birth control in their particular case, yet they hear the same priests preach on Sunday against it. While grateful that the priests are not as narrow-minded as they might appear, many Catholics are nonetheless disgusted by the duplicity. At best, they're confused. And they recognize this same dynamic at work when bishops cover up criminal conduct of priest pedophiles. They question if the hierarchy really means what it says about being against war, being against the death penalty, being in favor of environmental protection and nuclear disarmament. Catholics expect that what you see is what you get, an increasingly rare commodity in Catholic circles after Humanae Vitae. Another problematic result of this encyclical is that the consultative process that brought lay people, and especially women, into the conversation has not been used widely since. There is, as you know, no papal commission on homosexuality and heterosexism to which lesbian or gay people are invited to testify. There's no papal commission on abortion at which women have a privileged place. There's little evidence that those who believe that contraception is healthy, good, natural, and holy, as I do, have any input at all to Catholic theology. Rather, as I think will be evident during Pope Benedict XVI's visit to the U.S. this week, the hierarchy holds to its tenuous power, and lay people, especially women, are relegated to the sidelines and many are walking away. The mistake of issuing Humanae Vitae in the first place persists. Now, during my 10-minute presentation, sadly, 10 more women have died unnecessarily for pregnancy-related reasons around the world. In their memory, I call for a renewed Catholic theology of sexuality, developed by the whole Church, with women of the Global South in the first seats at the table with their children. Following their lead, I predict that one day Catholics will teach our children that sex is good, safe sex is better, and protected, mutually pleasurable safe sex is best of all.
Mary Hunt was then asked about the ethics of using contraception.
Well, I think that the situation has changed in recent years with HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases. I think my own position, and I think that of any responsible Catholic ethicist, would be that one uses condoms anytime one has sex that requires protection, whether from pregnancy or sexually transmitted disease. I think it's a no-brainer, and I also think that we have to think about young people as being sexually active, not because they have condoms available to them, but because in many instances they don't have proper sex education. And I think one of the other results of Humanae Vitae in Catholic circles has been a lack of good sex education. I remember a very intelligent Catholic woman, PhD actually, telling me that in her view, one abortion was less sinful than 30 pills a month, because she had been taught a kind of quantitative ethic that you can measure. I think that we need sex education along with Catholic moral teaching that says that protected sex is everybody's responsibility. And that goes to young people as well. I don't think there's no study that shows that the availability of condoms encourages sex. It's the use of condoms prevents disease.
This has been a Catholics for Choice podcast and the fourth and final podcast in our four-part series on the 40th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. For more information, including information on our newest publication, Truth and Consequence, A Look Behind the Vatican's Ban on Contraception, please visit our website at www.catholicsforchoice.org.